just happened?
What happened? We were good, and then we're not.
Well, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to Levels. I'm Jeremy Long. She is missing, but we call her the Sportsnista, not the Technista. So and there's reasons for that, and there she is. Cassandra Cousineau making an appearance. What the hell is happening over there?
Apparently incompetence. Incompetence is what's happening here. Not incontinence. I'm getting all the way that old yet. But straight up incompetence. Forgot all my passwords. I got two laptops, three microphones and three cameras, and one and a half of all that shit works.
You look like you work at a call center for AT&T or something.
Had to find a microphone network.
As long as we can hear you, we're good. So it's coming to summer's coming to an end. The kids are back in school, and eventually it'll start cooling down. But that does not mean the fight scene is cooling down. Not at all. In fact, it's picking up, and we've got a lot of fights to kind of talk about. Things that have happened over the last couple of weeks, and we're gonna try to fly through it with the quickness and all that good stuff. So let's start. I know, yeah, get you warmed up. Here we go. Let's start with the UFC 278 welterweight title fight. Kamaru Usman versus Leon Edwards, the actual second time these guys are going to meet. You've been in and around everything that's kind of going on the last few weeks with these fighters and these camps and everything. What's happening with the champ, and what's going on with Mr. Leon Edwards?
Well, the cool thing is that we're going to witness who I think is going to go down as the best welterweight in UFC history, in Kamaru Usman fighting Leon Edwards again. This guy, Kamaru, is fighting for legend status, not just Hall of Fame status. And so I'm curious to see if he does anything different with Trevor Whitman to fight Leon Edwards. It's been a minute since they've seen each other. And actually, we haven't seen Leon Edwards since he got two piece and a biscuit from Masvidal. So, we'll see what he's got to give. But of course, Kamaru's whole family is tough, as in the ultimate fighter. You have his brother Muhammad win the most recent season, and of course Kamaru won his season. This is like lapping everybody now. It's almost like an embarrassment of riches. But I think, and from hearing Kamaru, this is one of the most important fights of his entire career, because this is the one that cements that legendary status for the champ.
What is it about this fight with Leon Edwards? I mean, because these guys have already fought. They fought back in 2015. Of course, both of these guys are way earlier in their careers. They're both two different fighters now, and completely different from what they were. I mean, both of these guys. But what makes this fight so much more important than the second fight? I mean, the first fight.
I think because he is on the precipice of passing GSP. That's really what the difference is. Kobe Covington has been his most difficult opponent in this climb. A lot of people thought it would have been Tyron Woodley, but it wasn't. Went in close with Woodley, as a matter of fact. It was interesting to see him face Masvidal a couple of times. But now that he's passed Kobe, he's got to go back and kind of reassert himself, and this is him like lapping the field now, and he's got to win this fight.
Well, if he is a heavy betting favorite on this one, and of course you've mentioned Colby, who's ranked first in that division, but he's already beat him twice. Leon Edwards, I mean, would the next opponent, you think? And I am kind of looking ahead here. I mean, Leon Edwards is very capable of taking this championship from Usman, but what a showdown with
do we know, how confident are you in what Edwards can do? I mean, COVID, you had the shutdowns, he wasn't able to train in like the professional locations where he would normally train through all of that. Like, he hasn't got that work. And I mean, that Now we'll get to Teal, but you know, I've talked to a lot of fighters recently. Like, that ring rust is real, especially when you're talking main event ring rust. Like, how ready for all that is Edward, seeing as Usman's gotten all the reps?
Yeah, I mean, at least as far as the most recent stuff is concerned anyway. I mean, Edwards, you know, his last thing was what, Nate Diaz?
Was right. Nate?
Okay, so Nate Diaz, and that was a little bit ago now. So, and you have mentioned it, and we've talked about it at length before, about the layoff these athletes are. I mean, athletes, especially high-tuned professional athletes, are creatures of habit, right? They get in a rhythm. And if they can't stay and get in that rhythm and keep in that rhythm and everything, you see them fall off a lot. We saw it with, you mentioned Teofimo against, you know, his friend. But we'll talk about Tio here in a little bit, like you said. But
against his friend.
I think it's his friend. I think it's, I mean, I think the question for that is, can he avoid that big mistake? That big mistake, because Usman is capable, obviously, of, I mean, he's got power. He can take you down, submit you. And Edwards is going to have to fight the most mistake-free fight that he has ever done, because he was controlling Nate Diaz. And Nate Diaz has been well on the other side of his career for a while now. And Nate still almost put him away at the very end. So, you know, you make those kind of mistakes against a guy like Usman, who is very much at the top of his game right now, even at 35 years old, which is crazy that he's 35. Yeah, it would be a very, however you want to describe it, either a very long night or a very short night for Leon Edwards. I don't think Leon, personally, I don't think he has the power to knock out Usman. He definitely has the skill maybe to outpoint him, but he's going to have to fight a very, very clean, mistake-free fight in order to take that belt.
Well, Kamaru has demonstrated that he absolutely does have a chin. But the thing about chin is, like, you can chip away at it, and he's had those two wars with Kobe Covington, and let's see how much of it is left. But, you know, he's talking about perhaps going into boxing, having an exhibition match. He ain't fighting Canelo stuff. Or maybe moving up in weight to challenge himself there. And I just wonder at this point, you know, he's got some out of the octagon businesses that he's got in the mix. He's made a lot of money. He's one of the champions who's actually made significant money in UFC. But I like to see these guys have an exit plan. You know, not keep coming back and fighting to see who else is left. You got to be left. You got to be the last man standing. Have a real business plan in this business, because it is a fight business. And I don't care what league you're fighting in. You've got to be ready to, you know, 37 years old. You know, you got a little brother fighting. Corner him.
Yeah.
Get in there and corner Muhammad, who's like a baby, like Bam Bam in there. Like, his strength is ridiculous. Muhammad Usman.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'm seeing more and more of these fighters, and I think it's, you know, whether you like to admit it or not, guys like Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey have kind of paved the way to some of these second career, you know, opportunities anyway. You know, WWE, and even if you don't like professional wrestling or whatever, they carry over that legitimacy of real fighting into these things. So they make and already have these bases built in of fans. Yeah. That they can carry on and have these successful second careers. And Usman is very, he's very good on a mic. He's very personable. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a very likable guy, but he's very knowledgeable about the sport. So maybe even working him into commentary on some smaller shows or something like that, see what he has. You know, I know not everyone could be a commentator. Not everyone could be in WWE, but I think very possible for a guy like that, who's highly decorated, and like you said, at the end of his career, may very well be the greatest welterweight we've ever seen. So opportunities abound. And, you know, if we talk to Usman, he's probably like, there ain't no way I'm slowing down or whatever. But, you know, eventually Father Time wins. So.
Right. But I think it's a worthy conversation to talk about what's really next. And a lot of times, you know, people omit that second word of fight business. It is a business first, and you are your greatest commodity. And so I really like to hear these guys talking about kind of like what's left for them in life. You know, all these fans, anything else other than what you've done on the nights that they've contracted you to go to work. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's what I've asked to say.
Thank you for everyone who's jumping on the, on the.
Did we share this on our Twitter page?
I don't know. I don't know how any of this works. but if you want to talk along here, we're talking about UFC 278. That's coming up tomorrow night.
Tomorrow, Usman.
Yeah, leave a comment down there in chat. We're also going to talk a little in just a little bit about Anthony Joshua and Usyk, their second fight coming up, and also how Teofimo looked at 140, yeah, his debut at 140. Let's talk about move on to the co-main, which is Paulo Costa and the returning Luke Rockhold. The number one question, obviously, is what does Luke Rockhold have left?
He got a lot of conversation left. We know that. He had some things to say. He lit up Uncle Dana and UFC in terms of fighter pay. He's the guy to do it, though, right? I mean, he's got a name, and he got enough money that he doesn't need to fight again. He's got all those Ralph Lauren and whatever modeling gigs that he has, he's set up. So he doesn't have to beg for another fight to pay his rent. And so I thought that what he did was the right thing to do. You got a moment and you can take one for the team. He did that. But in terms of like that chin, like he even folded in half, like is what, past three fights?
Yeah, at least his last couple. I mean, Romero and then, oh boy. So, yeah, I mean, he's been knocked around a little bit, and he hasn't fought, obviously, since 2019. And then was it, yeah, Jan.
Yeah, yeah.
Jan Błachowicz, who was doing his thing, his march to a title. But at this point, I mean, 16-5, he's on the other side of, you know, he's kind of in that entering those twilight years for a fighter and everything. Why do you think Rockhold would want to come back, and especially against a guy like Costa? I mean, does he believe if he gets a win that maybe he's maybe another fight away from a title shot?
Sure, he's an interesting guy from Santa Cruz, grew up surfing, but like a natural born athlete, played a bunch of different sports, him and his brothers. And so he's a competitive guy. And I just think that you don't want to have the last professional memory of you being chinned. Even though, you know, Jan's got formidable power. I think this is the last fight on this contract anyway. Okay. So, you know, that's another reason to get in there is, you know, if that's kind of your last part of the obligation, because he shut down when COVID shut down. I remember actually a funny story. So last fight, this was when UFC used to have the athletes come out, they'd sit in a chair and they'd have like this big placard behind them with their name and you could have one-on-one conversations. So this is pre-COVID. And I said, stepped up, I was the next one to talk to Luke and he's like, I got to use the restroom, I'll be right back. And he never come back. So I ain't seen him since, and I thought that was rude. And when Jan did what he did, I kind of felt like Jan like did that to defend my honor. but I think, you know, all seriously, Luke is trying to get back into the win column and fulfill his obligation. I do think it is a win or be gone opportunity for him. The division doesn't necessarily need Luke Rockhold to come back in there and be competitive. You got some young guns coming up in there. I love what Jamal Hill is doing at light heavyweight, as a matter of fact. So this is going to be, I think, the last time we see him, whether he wins or he doesn't win. I mean, was he jiu-jitsu black belt? And so, you know, if it gets to the ground, he might have somewhat of an advantage, but Costa has just ridiculous power as well. And of course, a jiu-jitsu specialist, so Wilson. You know. I don't know. I'm picking Costa in that fight. I don't know.
There we go. Very quickly, you know, it just popped in my mind here. Rory McDonald.
Yeah.
Rory McDonald calls it a career. He retires. You know, the Red King. What is his welterweight legacy?
Of course, the legacy is going to be that fight, you know, with Robbie Lawler. I mean, the fact that they like smashed each other to smithereens, and honestly, neither one of them has been the same since that fight. Even though we've seen Robbie get a couple of wins, like you can tell, you know, he was different. Fights like that change a man. Absolutely change a man. The closest I can say, I mean, there have been a couple of wars. Remember Whaley and Joanna? I actually got it up here. What is this? 248. That fight, similar. But Whaley, like, went into different kind of, like, that next fight she lost to Rose and then lost again to Rose. Yeah. And she's just getting back. Wars like that take a divot out of you. But I still think that when people talk about Rory McDonald, like, that fight is going to be mentioned right alongside anything else in his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, he would come close a couple of times and ultimately fall short of UFC gold, but hopped over to Bellator, quickly won their welterweight championship, didn't hold it very long, you know, kind of, you know, well, relatively speaking, I mean, tried to grab their middleweight, didn't happen and everything. So a guy who always came to entertain the fans, his fighting style was always exciting. Like a lot of fighters, his last few years were marked with more and more fights that didn't go his way. And, you know, you hate to see that, especially with the ones. I always had a special place in my heart and my fight heart for Rory McDonald, man. He was always so very quiet and calm and that kind of American psycho persona that he would put on. But very, I mean, super nice. Always very accommodating to people in the media like us when we would cover events and things. So best of luck to him. Yeah. You know, one of Canada's finest there,
and Mr. Rory McDonald. That first big wave coming out of Canada into kind of like American mainstream mixed martial arts. And so, you know, had to travel across the border and get his work done, another BJJ descendant. But yeah, I mean, not a lot of guys actually find success in three different leagues. It's hard to do because a lot of times when they're leaving one, it's like on the backside of the career. You got cut, not necessarily you walked away. The only one who's really actually finding true success is Chris Cyborg. You know, she was pretty much kicked out of UFC.
Is it still strange to you that Amanda Nunes has a belt in a division that doesn't exist?
Well,
and they still parade her around and she still holds the belt, but there's no one in that division.
Do you think Kayla challenges her there? I mean, you think that, like, if they were to make the super fight, does Kayla actually challenge her?
One, I think she fights Cyborg before she fights Amanda, simply because, you know, UFC doesn't play nice with anyone anymore. They used to, which is crazy. Whenever they weren't the biggest in the sport, they played nice with Pride and all these other groups.
Right? When you ask him for a dollar.
Yeah. But now that the tables have turned, they don't really play nice. And then, I don't know, Kayla would have to, I mean, she's big. And I mean that in a nice way. I mean, she would have to cut some major weight to get down there. And has she ever fought at 145?
She is a woman. She fights at 155. She fights at 155. But it also gives Amanda an opportunity not to have to cut. As well. So maybe they meet at 150.
I tell you, money talks. And if there's money to be made, you know, I would love to see that fight. That would headline a pay-per-view. That would be a really great fight to determine legacy stuff as well, all these legacy fights and everything. But
some of these women are going to have to do that, right? There's going to have to be some cross-pollination to actually say that. I mean, who else is challenging Valentina? You're going to have Amanda actually, you know, meet her somewhere at a catch weight to have a truly competitive fight. Valentina's last fight, you know, there was some scrap going on. Some people thought that the champ was down, actually, going into that. But I like seeing that. I like seeing a fight that really pushes the champ, a dominant champ, in their own weight class. I like to see that, but I just got to think, when you look at Nunes and Kayla and Cyborg, all of them, there's going to have to be some cross power. Although, actually, Meta already beat Cyborg.
Yeah.
So
she did, and you know, it was a good little scrap, but I mean she ended it. So I mean, I can see where people would want to see a second one, because you know, there's not too many fighters. I mean, now you're seeing Pena did it in her first fight and took the strap and then kind of got beat up in the second one, but there's not too many other fighters who stand toe to toe and can stand toe to toe and, you know, give just as well as they get. And would it be entertaining? Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, is it going to happen?
Probably not.
I don't know. Money.
We need to do a show on like the matches that we would love to see that would never happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like Rousey and Carano or something like that, mm-hmm. You know, like prime stuff, you know, the things we missed out on, Fedor and Brock and,
right.
You know, those kind of matches that of course will never happen now, but you guys, Usyk, Joshua too, for all the marbles outside of the WBC and Tyson Fury realm. This is getting fun. It's getting a little chippy between these guys. And, you know, first off, your thoughts here on this upcoming rematch between Usyk and Joshua, and where it all is. I mean, we keep throwing this word around legacy. Apparently, this is the legacy episode. But what does it mean for each man going into this second matchup?
So one thing that stuck out to me this week is that, you know, Usyk is coming from fighting in a war in his home country. He's seen some things that Anthony Joshua or you or I have not seen. People really fighting for their lives. And it's a different type of internal motivation for him. The second thing is the weigh-in. So Usyk came in just 1 pound heavier than their first match, and I think Joshua 4 pounds. There's going to be, I would love to see the day of weigh-in, because I think that even though Joshua was able to evade some of it, when he got hit by Usyk, it hurts, man. You want to come in with a little bit more buffer for that guy, because I don't think Joshua is going to outbox Usyk. Not very many people actually have outboxed that guy. He's going to have to fight him, and I don't know if Joshua can do that.
You know, I will say this for the rematches and everything. I mean, when he got dropped and eventually stopped by Andy Ruiz.
That fool came in at 400 pounds for the rematch.
But Joshua looked sharper. But he looked sharper. He was bouncing around the ring. He wasn't standing in front of him like their first fight. So is it a game of like major corrections and these kind of things? Or, you know, is it more the same? I think it's very tantalizing, this matchup between these guys, because Usyk was underrated. He flew under the radar for a very long time. Unless, you know, I mean, we're talking about
undersized heavyweight.
Yeah. Unless you're talking about boxing purists who are hardcore, you know, fans and stuff like that. But for casual fans, they're like, who is this guy? He came out of nowhere. And just like you mentioned, being away to serve in the Ukraine along with like Lomachenko and these guys, you know, what has that done? You know, is his mind on this fight? Is it, you know, is it back home with that? Is it going to cause him to come out with an angry fury that maybe he slips up and Joshua, mm-hmm. who does have the power to stop him, you know, and, you know, how do all these things factor in? Are there going to be major corrections on Joshua's part? And, you know, what kind of battle are we going to see? I think this may be the Usman and Edwards, I think, is going to go one way decidedly with Usman, but this is very, very intriguing as far as probably one of the most intriguing boxing matchups in a good long while.
And Usyk is just fun. I mean, the guy's got like a Dumbo stuffed animal. You know, he's like makes all these weird faces. He's an interesting guy. I love seeing the fight week coverage with him, especially juxtaposed to Anthony Joshua, because he's so buttoned up. It's like, you know, very British.
Yeah, he's very quiet. Mm-hmm. He doesn't he says stuff every once in a while that I think someone is probably feeding him to say or whatever, his handlers or whatever, but he's very, you know, respectful of people. It's not his style to really kind of go after a guy, you know, his opponents and everything. And then every once in a while, he'll be like, yeah, you know, but, and he'll say something, you go, I don't think that was you. I think somebody was telling you, hey man, we got to sell this fight. We got to sell the bad blood or something. But
I think he's just very calm. He's selling a lot in the UK. These are not two fighters that are carrying a lot in the United States, which is a shame because it's going to be a high level, high quality, heavyweight fight. But if Usyk's conditioning is like declined a little bit, given everything he's gone through, and Anthony Joshua is able to like step up his conditioning, which we've seen him do, watch for the holding. I remember like the Joseph Parker fight. If there's a ref who's not like, who's like going to call that a little bit closer, it could change some things a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Going to be a good fight. Speaking of.
That's on DAZN, right? I think I paid $25 to get that damn fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be watching over your shoulder then. I'll be watching through your window. Hey, lean it this way.
No, find me somebody's that. Instagram feed somewhere. Like, we all know, ain't no money in boxing. Ain't no money in that.
Dana White gonna get after you, man. He gonna track you down, and he gonna be mad at you. Teofimo Lopez, his debut at 140 went pretty well for him. You know, stopping Campa in the seventh round. How do you think Tio looked? What did you think of his fight overall? His little tune-up, his debut at 140.
I think he looked good enough against Campa. At 140, there's a lot of different dudes, lots of different skill sets, lots of different experience. He was hitting Campa straight, flush, over and over again, tagging his dude. Campa kept coming. Either Campa's got himself a hell of a chin, or that power ain't carrying to 140. And one good thing I saw come of all of that is that Teofimo did not get frustrated and just start to get unnecessarily aggressive outside of the game plan. He continued to box, went back to the jab in like the mid to late round, and then ended up stopping him. But I do think that there's some things to clean up. He said something weird that his legs didn't feel right when he got in there. I mean, it could just be like nerves. I don't know. I asked him like, well, when did you feel like your legs were under you? And he felt like it was around the fourth round when he actually was able to feel comfortable in there. And even like, you know, afterwards, he was still a little uncomfortable, still figuring things out. But I think 140 is going to be a big test for him.
You actually caught up with T.O., and talk to him for just a quick minute. Do you want to set up this clip we have here with him? What would you guys discuss? Or?
Yeah, so I talked to him then after weigh-ins the night before the fight, or the afternoon before the fight. A couple things came up. Asked him why Vegas. That fight, originally he did not want to be in Vegas. He says where he wanted it to be. It was controversial to switch it to Vegas, according to him. And then I asked him about, you know, like, what does he want people to know about him as a man now? We've seen enough of him as a fighter, given what he's gone through personally. He got into this at the post-fight, but there was a lot going on in his personal life, as usual. He was married and divorced by the time he was 24, has a young child who he's either not seen or seen very little of. And he called out the child's mother, to which Top Rank PR was like, okay, we're going to have to wrap this up. Got him out of there pretty fast and in a hurry.
Let's check this out real quick.
Okay.
It's been a while for me being with you, so now it's like, it's great to be back though, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people calling it the comeback, and you're saying it's the retakeover. What do you need to remind people about who you are this time around?
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. So it's all about just pushing that, man. Just really just, honestly, I'm just grateful. I'm thankful You know, just giving everything to God always, you know, and never forgetting that. So it's all about, you know, just reminding everyone, I guess, you know, we are here not just for temporary. We're not a one-hit wonder. We're here forever.
I think a lot of people forget about how important the grind is. What have you learned this time about, like, things that elements of the grind that maybe you should pay closer attention to?
Honestly, just self-care, self-love. You know, I think outside of everything that my sport brings to the table, everything that I've done in the sport, I mean, I've been in the game for 21 years now. So it's all about, you know, that doesn't change. You know, my work ethic, it only grows and it gets better. However, you can't forget about you. You know what I'm saying? And that's really what I needed to take in this time around.
Speaking of what got you there, you're trained by your father. You have a young son. What do you want people to remember about Teofimo, the man?
That I'm a real man. I wasn't man-made, I'm self-made. You know, I'm as real as it comes, and as this world gets more fake, the less real we see around, and that's what they hate, you know. But, you know, God is always going to prevail. God is always going to win no matter what, whether I'm gone, whether someone else is gone. The real will always prevail. You know why? Because people may not like the truth, and if they don't like it, so let it kill them.
A lot of people want to talk to you about what's next, what's next. Why do we need to be paying attention to this fight Saturday night?
Because nothing's next without this fight.
Last question for me is, a lot of people have tried to stage a comeback in Las Vegas. Why Las Vegas? Why didn't you go to New York or any other place around the country? Why did you need to be here for this fight?
It's Vegas, baby. Vegas for the weekend, you know what I'm saying? really, though, you know, it's all about, you know, I really wanted to push this fight to Miami. I guess things didn't work out in that sense. I don't know why. I mean, I do. I just don't want to explain that part. You know, just
Why not?
Because it's controversial.
Controversial. There you go.
He's speaking a lot of platitudes lately. Like, you know, like, if it doesn't make them stronger, if they don't like it, then let it kill them. What?
Yeah. Well, why was it controversial? Did he ever tell you, like, why it was controversial? Okay, man. Teofimo Lopez. Always entertaining. I like the dude. I like his style and everything. But sometimes, you know, he's funny.
I really, really, like, you know, seriously like this kid and root for him as a human. He needs a sports psychologist. He needs people in his ear and in his camp who are sane, professional, and not toxic, and not highly emotionally charged. I ain't saying his daddy shouldn't be in his corner. I'm saying he need people who are the polar opposite of what senior offers him. And he's 24 years old. And a lot has happened to kind of damage him physically. I mean, look, physically, he almost died. He was in the ICU for 5 days after losing to Kambosos. You know, that was a tremendous risk. Several doctors have confirmed that he should have gone in, and several have said, you know, you're lucky to be alive here. And he's got to get right mentally, because he's not winning another championship being an erratic kind of like thinker like that.
Yeah, you know, mental health is real in every sport and everything. I mean, it affects champions and everyone, normal fans alike. So, you know, and like you said, I root for the guy because, you know, he's always been, you know, very steady with people as far as like giving time and all of that. He's given a lot. And
look, he talked to me after weighing in. You know how hungry he was? Like, you know, he's like trying to rehydrate. He's, you know, they're giving him beverages and like a snack to try to get over. And I watched him. Well, he did several interviews, some in Spanish, some for other countries. You know, he's Honduran, and, you know, came. Like, I was like in a corner, and I was like, I'm gonna wait for you. And he came right over. And so, you know, he's always been gracious. I wish him well. I really do.
Yeah. And there's a number of intriguing options. Of course, he wants to fight as fast as possible for a belt. So if he was busy talking up Josh Taylor and guys like that, but, you know, how realistic he's gone on record several times saying he's not interested in a fight with Ryan Garcia for whatever reasons. Arnold Barboza Jr. was there ringside, and he wants that fight and has been pushing for that fight. But there's also Jose Cepeda and Ramirez, Gary Russell. I mean, there's a number of names there, but who do you think the most realistic for that December 10th date that he's already circled and put on the calendar?
Yeah, the only one available is Barboza. So because, you know, Zepeda's tied up, Ramirez is getting married. Taylor is like, you know, I think, is he getting married too? Something else, like he's unavailable for December. Bob Arum says like they're exploring options. You know, yeah. Teal said that he's going to fight in the big room at Madison Square Garden in December. And so it's a very limited number of possible competitors that he can fight. And I think Barboza is the one that makes the most sense. He needs another legitimate contender in that 140 division before he actually is considered as, you know, a possible contender for the belt. And I think Barboza is that guy.
Barboza's undefeated. You know, he's got the record, he's got the look, and he's got the pedigree. So, you know, it makes sense if he wants a shot at the belt. With, and all these belts are spoken for right now. They're all tied up in different fights that are going to be happening. So, you know, you go in, you do what you're supposed to do against Barboza. It sets you up pretty for maybe Q2 of you know, 2023, fighting for, you know, at least some portion of those straps up there, which, you know, there you go. Those are, that's what he's looking at and looking for and everything. So we also have another clip. You caught up with, who'd you catch up with? Estrada?
Sinisa Estrada.
And what are you guys kind of chatting about here?
Kind of a lot of things. She is, of course, now signed with Top Rank. And I talked with her about the state of women's boxing and her friend, Chris Justino Cyborg, coming into boxing.
Having great matchups in women's boxing and also having the support of big promoters in boxing who are giving us this platform to be able to be seen by people. So this is just the beginning. It's only going to get better and better.
What do you think about Chris Cyborg saying she's going to make her debut in boxing?
Oh, I love Chris. Chris is a friend of mine. Chris is great. And I think it's cool. You know, I have seen her spar before boxing. I did some rounds with her before, so I think it's going to be good for her. I think she'll do very, very well.
Of course, your top-ranked stablemate, Michaela Mayer, is going to be in action soon against Alicia Baumgartner. How do you see that fight going down?
That's going to be a great matchup, and, you know, Michaela has all the great boxing skills. In her last fight, she showed that she can also fight on the inside, and then Baumgartner's the power puncher, so it's going to be a good matchup, and I'm excited to see that.
You've been busy outside of the ring. How important is it for you to be building your business and your brand outside of boxing?
It's definitely important. It's important, especially being a female fighter, because, you know, we don't always get that exposure and that platform that we deserve. So to be able to just keep my name out there and keep busy with broadcasting and commentating and other things, it's something that I definitely enjoy doing, and something that I need to do in order to keep myself busy in between fights. It's going to be almost a year since I've been out of the ring, and like it's crazy to think that, because it doesn't feel like it's been that long. So I'm just excited that I could just finally get back in there.
Last question: are you finally past Marlena Esparza?
What was that?
Marlena Esparza, finally past that.
Am I past that? No, I think that it'll be a huge fight for women's boxing. A rematch will be big for us. So I want to fight her again. I want to shut her up once and for all, so she has no excuses the next time I beat her again. So yeah, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Oh, Shadow. Love her, man. She's so, you know, love her personality too.
Yeah,
and lots of skill there. So yeah, I would love to see that matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a second go.
She, remember when she last fought Marlon, like it was that huge gash caused by the headbutt, and Marlon lost her titles. But listen, she fights at 105 and 108, right? She's not, you know, she's in like the minimum weight classes. But man, like her skill set is ridiculous. ridiculous. And I watched her. There was a barricade between fans and it was a media area that she was in. She was doing some commentating. Yeah. And there were a couple of girls there, and they were calling her, and she lifted one of them off. The girl must have been like 9 or 10 years old, like half her body. But she lifted that girl over the barricade so she could stand there and talk to her and take pictures. And like, there were no cameras around. Like, nobody had to like see that. It's just who she is, what she does.
Yeah. Yeah. Estrada, I think before their first fight, we had both ladies on the show kind of talking, man. And you know what? She does it with the smile, and she's, you know, she's of course, you know, got that wonderful smile of hers. And
she's like, I'm cute,
but she likes it. She can talk some trash too, man.
Yeah.
So yeah. They're great interviews. If you go to levelshow.com, you can see them. So
actually, after that fight with Marlon, I was in the media room, and Franchon Cruz was in there. I don't know what happened, but her people said something to Franchon. Franchon Cruz ain't nobody's punk, okay? Nobody's. And she's also friends with Marlon Esparza. And I've seen Franchon, like, look up to Sinise's, I think it was her manager, and she was just like, look, I'm in these heels, but at any moment, we can do this. And so Sinise was like, we're good, you know, and they got up out of there, but it was interesting.
Hey, man.
She talked about Michaela Mayer. And Alicia Baumgartner, man, their Twitter back and forth has been fire and so much freaking fun.
And that's the kind of, you know, love it or hate it, you know, however you feel about trash talk. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that women's boxing really needs to just keep it and stay relevant and get the fans involved with it and everything. So, you know, I like to see it. I like to see the fire. I like to see the, you know, as much as I like respectful fighters and stuff, come on, man. We also like some trash talking. You know what we do, man. You know, you don't play boxing, you don't play MMA, man. So, you know, these guys are in the hurt business.
Yeah.
You know, all these fighters are in the hurt business. So that's what we like to see. So
I talked to Coach Al, who's training Michaela, her longtime coach, and he even said, he was like, man, I can't believe like how much smack these girls are talking. They're worse than the guys.
I like it. I like it, man. I like it. See, but you know, I'm one of those people that I know people will make fun of me, but you know, I like the Conor McGregors of the fight business and stuff because they, you know, it's just part of the game, man. You know, it's fun.
Oh,
trash talk is fun. Makes you care about it.
Yeah.
Fired up. That's
going to be an interesting fight because, you know, of course, Mayer's a taller fighter. We're not talking about Alicia's power. But did you see the May Hamadouche fight with Michaela Mayer? She had to stand in there and bend with this woman. So, Michaela can fight. And she,
yeah,
right.
She showed she could get in the phone booth and do her thing, man. So I think it's going to be really a really great fight. And again, I think like Usman and Edwards, it's going to come down to mistakes. You know, who's going to make those mistakes? And Michaela is obviously the cleaner technical boxer. Alicia's got that power. You know, can she capitalize in it, or is Michaela going to keep her at length, you know, at arm's length and everything, and just outbox her for the night?
Michaela's been there with higher level competition. I know that people are fixated on this really weird knockout that she had, that Alicia had of Terry Harper, but I just think that Michaela Mayer, even though she's a champ, is a little bit underrated in this fight, given all of her experience and like what we've seen her do. That's on the Clarissa Shields undercard with Savannah Marshall.
Yeah, Savannah Marshall and Clarissa Shields are finally we get the rematch from the amateur days all the way
20 years
to
later.
Now. And those two have been going at it, sniping at each other for years.
Years and years.
Go, let's do it, man. I'm excited for that card.
Thank you.
And again, I'll let somebody pay for it and I'll watch.
I'll pay for it because I know Clarissa's getting some of the pay-per-view, and so you know, I'm gonna put $5 some money on her books.
Yeah, okay. All right. You put $5 in, I'll put $5 in, we'll watch the fight. So. Share the fights that way. So yeah. No, that's it. That was everything that's going on right now as far as what we're talking about. What are you guys ready to see? What are y'all ready to, you know, who do you got? Usman, Edwards? We never really said. Who do you got? Usman, Edwards?
I got the champ. I mean, I don't. After I saw him twice do what he did against Kobe Covington, I don't think Leon Edwards is a Kobe Covington. You know, anybody can get got, but if I got to pick one, I'm going to pick the champ.
If you got to put $5 on it,
I got to shake the piggy bank, you know.
And I think you said earlier about Costa Rockhold, the co-main event on UFC 278. Who do you got there? You got Surfer Boy?
I don't know Costa on that. I do. I just think that he is wild enough to, like, get that shot off and actually make Rockhold pay. I don't know. Who you got now?
Rockhold, man.
Surfer Boy.
Just because the odds are, you know, the underdog stuff, so betting-wise, I'd probably put a little bit of Rockhold. Because
gotcha.
I think, you know, he's still got a little bit of power. His chin is gone, I think. Mm-hmm. And I mean that in all respect, man. You know, something your chin can only take so much, and he's been knocked out with the best of them. Romero, I sent him to the shadow world, and he ain't returned yet. So he sent him there one way, no return ticket. So
he's kind of in the same consideration as Cody Garhart, in terms of like the amount of damage that he's taken and what is actually still possible. I talk about rising stars just fizzling.
No love. Yeah, man. All of a sudden he's schooling Dominic Cruz, and then he's getting KO'd left and right. There's only so much you can take, man. So.
Left, right, and center.
Once that button is pushed, that's what happens. Joshua Usyk?
Usyk. I don't think that Joshua can make it that many adjustments to actually change fight. If Usyk is able to show up the same Usyk that we've been seeing, he should win that fight. Even in a decision, I think it goes to Usyk. I don't see it being stopped. Do you?
I don't know, man. I don't think so. I think it'll probably go decision. Yeah, that's probably what I'd put money on. I still have to look at my betting lines, but that's what I would do. I'm seeing if there's any other enticing ones on this card here. I know a couple guys, just a random note here. I know a couple guys that I followed back in Southeast Texas, of course, the beginning of their careers and all that stuff. The infamous Mike Jackson is returning. He of the CM Punk Mickey Gall situation a couple years ago. He's been booked for another fight. It's that you know, nothing against Mike. It was definitely that Mick Maynard connection. Mick used to run LFA, and now is the one of the matchmakers along with Sean.
Get your bread, amen.
Get his stuff, and of course Ryan Spann's been booked again. So my guys coming up.
Who's Ryan Spann booked for?
He is fighting. Who is he fighting? I don't want
coming off a win.
He is fighting Dominic Reyes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a good fight. Ryan Spann, Dominic Reyes. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a really, really good fight. Man. You know, props to my guy Ryan. So let's see. I mean, that's a big win if he can get it, and would probably put him in at least the talk of title fights, and at least some are eliminators anyway. So.
You know, you're talking about that division, and we see John Jones has been active this week talking about December.
Been putting out some videos. You know, one video, people were complaining because his hands look slow, so he put out a different video with his hands look decidedly faster.
Yeah.
He looks powerful, bulked up and everything, so now we're just waiting on official
words. He's a freaking nightmare at heavyweight. He's a nightmare at any weight. You know, when he gets in there against, like, real professional caliber heavyweights, and there's only a handful of them, right, who can actually, like, challenge him. He's just got that killer instinct and that ridiculous skill set that at any moment can end you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, all of those guys in the top five. And, of course, you have a big fight here in the next couple of weeks Sarah Gaughan and Tayavisa Vasa. I totally just butchered his name. there you go. But they're fighting in the main. Of course, that's gonna work some stuff out. So we're looking at that shuffling between Ngannou and Stipe and John Jones and what all is going to happen there. And, of course, right on the outside are guys like Saragon and Blades. Yeah.
So you think he can do a shoey in there? If to a tie,
no, I thought that was in I thought that was in that, France.
That shuffle.
Oh, okay. Ngannou, I didn't know.
Yeah, that was in France. That was in France. That's my voice. I hear my voice.
Yeah.
That lets you know that it's time for us to wrap it up. When you hear two of my voices, it's time to go.
Two Dermies.
Ain't nobody need that. Thank you, everyone, for watching, for staying with us, for all the comments and stuff like that. We appreciate it. And it's good to see you again. And next time we'll have Ralph. Ralph, just congratulations to our guy Ralph, who just purchased his brand new place. So he's getting the keys to his place. So, you know, he's making moves. And, of course, to our guy Mike Dixon, who is doing whatever Mike Dixon does.
But we love him
for it. So, yeah. So, for the Sportsnista, I'm Jeremy Long. This is Levels. And next time, I think we'll be chatting with a fighter or two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll do.
Gassing people.
We'll reach out and touch someone. All right. TC Martin.